This episode of the show is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free 30-day trial and free audiobook of your choosing by going to audibletrial.com/missspots. Choose from over 180,000 different titles, such as Chris Jericho's latest book, No is a Four-Letter Word. It's even narrated by the man himself. Audiobooks are perfect for the person on the move. Believe me, they're great. Maybe you want a mystery novel or a biography of someone you love. Audible has it all. Plus, it's free to try. If you don't like it, which would be weird, cancel and keep your free audiobook that you downloaded forever. Go try it now at audibletrial.com/missspots. Audible. Listening is the new reading. Welcome back to the Miss Spots podcast on MissSpots.com, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, and Geek Life Radio. My name is Mike, and with me, as always, is the Shannon Moore to my Evan Courageous. Here's Kevin.
Thank you for not making me Evan Courageous. I never want to be Evan Courageous.
So that's why you said...
That's why...
Give me either Shannon Moore or Shane Helms.
I also would have accepted Tank Abbott there. I could have been Tank Abbott. Yeah. My last name is Abbott. It would have worked out good for me. But yeah, I'm fine with Shannon Moore.
Tank Abbott, the mascot of Three Count. All right. So we have a pretty straightforward show, I believe, this week. We got Raw. We got SmackDown to talk about as we get closer to Elimination Chamber and Fastlane and WWE just inflating the main events for both of those to add more people into them.
It is just baffling to me. We are always asking for less people, and they found a way to add people to an Elimination Chamber match, which only has four pods, and they still found a way to shoehorn somebody else into it. Baffling. Yeah.
We'll see how they go about that. Kevin, why don't you take us right in the Monday Night Raw?
Personally, I hope that they put up like one of them in like one of those like Rubbermaid totes. You know what I mean?
Right in the middle of the
ring. And
then
just put a brick on top of it, like a really heavy one. And then they can like come in. Okay, never mind. So Raw this week was started off by the one, the only, Mr. John Cena. And Cena, the free agent, I believe. He must not be very good because no one signed him to a contract yet.
Or maybe there's collusion going on.
Yeah. Listen, when LeBron James becomes a free agent, I believe at the end of this offseason, he's not going to be just going to different teams and playing one game here and one game there.
They really don't understand what free agent means.
I don't think they do. But John Cena is a free agent and cuts his promo about WrestleMania. The big takeaway from this was the fact that he said WrestleMania can bring legends back from the dead.
Yeah.
The long rumored match between John Cena and The Undertaker, for the last 3 years, it seemed like this match was going to happen, and they've never pulled the trigger on it. Mike, I believe you are in my camp. I think it's been pretty evident that we don't want to see The Undertaker wrestle at WrestleMania. And
no,
I am not interested in that, and I really hope that they do not do it. But this is one of those very foreshadowy kind of hit you over the head with a brick. It almost seems, after hearing that, it feels like it's just going to happen, right?
Yeah, that seems likely.
Or it's trolling, one of the two.
It could be. WWE is not the best really at trolling. Okay, I take that back. They're actually really good at
Roman Reigns' entire career.
But usually inadvertently,
yeah,
they're really good at trolling. Yeah. Part of the idea of not wanting to see Undertaker wrestle again is selfish because we were at last WrestleMania and it'd be nice to be able to say we saw his last match. But at the same time, we all know that his matches haven't been that good over the past few years. So apparently he's had surgery and he feels better than he has in a number of years, but I still don't think that that's enough reason to come back and wrestle, but ultimately WWE is going to do whatever he wants. And if, and sure, this is really on him. He wants this match.
Yeah, and the WWE is not going to turn him down because he's a big draw. So, yeah. But that was just one little Easter egg in that speech that he gave, that promo that he cut. The big thing was Miz and John Cena. This entire start to this was setting up a match between Miz and John Cena that Cena proposed, Miz accepted, the one-on-one match with the loser having to enter the chamber first. And Miz, wonderful, gets in there, and John Cena acknowledges the crowd reaction that Miz is getting. Miz getting pops, like he continues to, seems like he's building momentum, and the crowd seems to love him more and more on a weekly basis, it seems. But we go right into this match. So we get John Cena, we get the Miz.
We had a beatdown from the Miztourage first.
Yeah, we had the Miztourage jump Cena, and that's why Miz decided to take the match, because he felt like Cena was already beaten down. But Kurt Angle made the match official and kicked the Miztourage out from ringside. So we get a one-on-one match between Miz and Cena. What were your thoughts on this match?
I thought it was a fine match. These two have worked together a whole lot in their careers, so they almost should be able to put a good match together in their sleep. There were plenty of points where you could audibly hear John Cena calling spots, but
no,
that's John.
No, I can't. I did not believe that.
But it was a fine match, and you know, it was the finish that we all kind of expected to happen.
Yeah, Avalanche AA, and John Cena goes over
here. Yes, because the regular AA is not a finishing move anymore.
Apparently, it's just a transition move. One thing that I was very impressed by, as I loved, was the counter to the figure four leg lock into the yes lock, basically, is what Cena did. Did you remember seeing that?
Yes, and Cole called it an STF.
Of course he did. Yeah, and then Corey Graves correctly called out exactly what it was. But it was a really nice counter, and pointing out some of the technical skills that John Cena doesn't quite have on a regular basis. I also think creative counters is always something that I love in professional wrestling.
I also think that commentary, for the most part, other than Graves slipping that in there, I think that that spot went over their heads, that they didn't realize that that was a nod to the issues that Miz has had with Brian over the years. I think a very small little storytelling piece that was kind of lost.
I agree with that. And Miz losing here is fine. He's never hurt by these things. And him going into the match first and being one of the first entrants there, because, I mean, obviously the number one and number two entrants are the same.
Yes.
Right. But he's the number one guy. And it's a good spot for Miz to have to fight back from and kind of just be that exhausted heel that gets his ass kicked the whole time.
Yeah. It'll probably be with either Finn or Seth, another guy who can last longer in the match, unless they start them with. And that's the thing we don't know. We'll talk about that more.
Sure, sure.
The chamber.
We did get a Matt Hardy promo here that was pretty run-of-the-mill. The one thing I did notice about this is worth mentioning is that they cut to the crowd a bunch during his multiple deletes, basically saying, hey, crowd, you like this guy. This crowd likes this guy. You should get behind this guy. This was very pandery. I mean, I'm not against it. I think it's showing that he's popular, but the issue is that the lead chants were happening the night they came back.
Yeah.
They already had this wave of momentum to ride. They could have done it. Right now, how about this? How about you have him win matches? How about you have him cut promos that are interesting? How about you have him expand his broken, woken / universe? Mm-hmm. Don't just cut to the crowd and say, basically, if you want someone that's going to go out there and get what's up like R-Truth or We the People like Jack Swagger, where the thing they do is over, they're not, then you're doing a pretty good job of it, WWE.
Yeah. Well, I think that they can go a little more with that now if they so choose, especially now that the Hardys own all of the broken stuff officially as of, I think, last week. So I think that they were always a little cautious for the most part about jumping into that too quickly because WWE was afraid of being sued.
And they're also, it's a gimmick that they didn't come up with. And I think that might be as much, if not more. So
that's always going to be there. Yeah.
I don't think they're ever going to do anything good with Matt Hardy. I think this is going to be exactly that thing where they're going to be happy that people chant delete and that's it. And that's what this promo meant to me and their production cuts around that. Speaking of production, Speaking of words on screens, we saw a promo from the Good Brothers where the words they were saying were all over our screens. Now, I have a question for you, Mike. Do you think that was a scripted promo?
Probably not.
Probably not. No, those are probably real-time words coming up on the screens. I remember that classic Stone Cold promo when he beat Jake Roberts at the King of the Ring when, you know, because Stone Cold said so, like exploded in giant letters on the TV screen. Remember that?
Yes.
That's the only reason he really got over. Yeah, it was pretty impressive. I am not a fan of this. I think it looks really cheesy, and I think it has a look that I don't understand. Now, maybe I'm an old man who doesn't understand social media. I've mentioned before that this seems very social media-esque, but what I want is more real-sounding promos that are really coming from a non-scripted, spur-of-the-moment kind of deal, and this is just overproduced and seems like a pre-tape vignette.
You know, I don't think I've seen anyone say that about these. There's plenty of complaints about these, but you know, that's a great point that you mention of that it makes it look fake by doing that, because then they not only pre-taped, they either pre-taped it and put all this production into it, or you're saying that what they're saying has been scripted to where the live feed can add these in as it's going. Yeah. I just never thought of that, and I don't think I've seen anyone complain about that, but that's a great argument.
I can always come up with new fun things to complain about, Mike. You know anything about me, you know that. That was leading to, it's not even the rubber match anymore. I believe it's the 12th match we've had against Anderson and Gallows in the Revival. It's probably been less than that, but it feels like forever. The Revival and Anderson and Gallows, little buggy boy I had about this match. Revival does what the Revival does. That's repetitive. They jumped Anderson and Gallows before the match, went after Luke Gallows' knee. Beautiful. Love it. Perfect. Great tag team strategy. Then they spent the entire first three quarters of the match getting their ass kicked. Having them come out, hurt somebody, and then get dominated from pillar to post pretty much the entire match does not seem like it makes a lot of sense to me.
No, it doesn't.
These guys are tag team specialists. These guys are strategic. The matches they put on in NXT with Gable and Jordan and with just everybody they worked with pretty much were clinics in great tag team wrestling. They are greater than the sum of their parts because they're a cohesive unit that worked better than anybody else does. That's the story that should be told. Now, they took a shortcut as heels. They hurt the knee. They eventually went back to the knee. I love pulling the knee brace off, punching the knee. It's very old school. It worked great. And they ended up getting the win at the end of the day. Great. Happy. There's no need for these guys to fight anymore. Neither one of them are benefiting from this pairing as I can see it right now. But the Revival should not be squashing main roster talent, but they should be using their skills to get one up on everybody on a regular basis.
It does seem like the structure of the match was put together strangely because, yeah, you had them get the upper hand by attacking them before they got to the ring, and that should have led into them controlling the match at the beginning. You get the baby faces to get the hot tag, and then it ultimately leads into, no, they aren't able to overcome that, and the bad guys win. But
not every match has to go exactly that way, and it's not that the match was wrong. They did it the way they did it. The issue lies in here for me is that the Revival should be showing that they're tag team specialists. Mm-hmm. They should say it, and they should show it, right? Right now, Anderson and Gallows, they never really turn babyface. No. Right? They've just been affiliated with Finn Balor, who they kind of weren't in this episode of Raw. Who knows if they're still even going forward with that. So the crowd doesn't really care about Anderson and Gallows. They've never really been given a reason to. Screaming nerd is not a reason to cheer somebody. And I don't think the WWE realizes that. The Revival are not even lukewarm. They're a cold team that needs a lot of help. When the pinfall happened and no one made a peep in the arena, why would they think any less? You have two cold teams, one of which is being billed as something that they haven't been booked as. It's not helping anybody out. It's not getting anybody over. And that's why I think they have to split these guys up and get the Revival run roughshod over a couple tag teams here.
Yeah.
So that was that. The Kurt Angle letting us know that Ronda Rousey will sign her contract at the upcoming pay-per-view. A contract signing on a pay-per-view. How do you feel here, Mike?
I find this weird. Like, because for 48 hours after the Royal Rumble, all we saw were articles about Ronda Rousey has signed with the WWE, which says contract already signed.
Sure.
And WWE was pushing all of this press that they were getting. But now, in storyline, we're supposed to believe, no, now she's going to sign a contract.
We've got the uncomfortable feeling that Stephanie McMahon's going to be involved in this in some way, shape, or form. Yeah. That's what they're going with. I've heard some rumors that, no, it's going to be Rousey and Charlotte. I would much rather see that myself. But this is a attraction for the pay-per-view. I think it's probably a good point to have it done there. The other big news here is that Jason Jordan did indeed have neck surgery. I think we heard that plenty throughout the grapevine, but acknowledging it on TV that Jason Jordan, they did not say how long he would be out, or Kurt did not say that, but did say he would miss WrestleMania. I really like the fact that Kurt Angle called out the crowd for cheering Jason Jordan's injury. This is his storyline son. And for him to basically say it's bad form, or what, however he worded it, to cheer for the injury of a superstar is just not right. Angle is a babyface general manager. He shouldn't have just went with the crowd there or ignored it. He called it out. It was better that he did that. It doesn't leave open that kind of gaping plot hole.
Mm-hmm.
So I did enjoy that. But this all led into Seth Rollins. And Seth Rollins cut a pretty good promo talking about how he used to be the man around there and wanted to be involved in the match for later on in the evening to give us what we thought would be one person to second chance to enter the chamber. And Seth gets the crowd reaction that Kurt Angle's looking for and gets himself added to the match. A fatal four-way turning into a fatal five-way. We get a lot of
turning
this going
a six-person match into a seven-person match.
Seth should have been involved in this the whole time. It almost reeks of poor long-term booking because you get the feeling that Seth was not supposed to be involved in this match at all, and that because of the injury, they shoehorned him in. I can understand him doing it because of the injury to Jason Jordan. I hope it wasn't because the leaked photo of Finn Balor as part of the Elimination Chamber match that that went up earlier in the day on WWE.com. I hope that's not why they did it, but because just be better than that. Don't just react to something and throw somebody in there. Let's have some long-term booking. Let's follow through on something.
We screwed up. Now we got to throw a curveball.
Yeah. The match with Sasha and Bayley, we've seen these guys go at it numerous times. They have won our match of the year for the Miss Spots Awards previously, feud of the year. These guys have tore the house down. How did you feel about this match?
I thought it was a solid match. I thought they told a good story in the ring, good action. It wasn't their best match by any stretch, maybe one of their best on the main roster, because I'm trying to think of other matches they may have had with one another, but I thought it was a good, solid match.
Who was playing what role here for you?
I think that Bayley was tenacious babyface, and Sasha was the babyface who would do anything to win. Not almost tweener, but not quite there.
I found some heel mannerisms with Sasha. Some cockiness. She mocked Bayley at one point. So I definitely saw some heel progression in Sasha's character, but I did like the aggression that Bayley showed. She showed more aggression than she has in months and months. And that competitive fire that she had in NXT that she's never had on the main roster. Mm-hmm. So I did enjoy this. Nia Jax ends up taking them both out at the end of the match. Bayley does go over with an avalanche Bayley to belly, and we get a stare down, which we think is either going to erupt in fisticuffs or a hug or a handshake between Bayley and Sasha. We don't get that moment because Nia Jax attacks them. This is another instance where a curveball was thrown. Enzo Amore gets fired from the company because of what he did or did not do. Well, we don't know, but for the allegations that have happened against Enzo Amore, gets fired. Nia Jax goes from a dominating heel, monster to a love-smitten, smiling stereotype. Now she's back to being a killing monster again. They got a curveball thrown to them. They need to change course. I get that. But how about not booking people in idiotic storylines that aren't going anywhere? How about you just keep the killing monster on track and get her over and use that character properly? What do you think?
I absolutely agree with you there, especially about her, because that Enzo stuff, I just didn't know where the hell that was going. I just felt like it was going to go nowhere very fast. So yeah, they definitely slowed her momentum down a lot by that, and trying to pick right back up without any blink. I mean, that's WWE for you. They're going to try to pretend that shit never happened. I almost feel like you are foreshadowing by saying all that into another monsters segment a little later.
Well, kind of yes and kind of no. I do not think they have booked Nia well at all from the moment she came up. They assume that the fans think she's something she's not, because she's never shown the ability to really dominate anybody. She's won squash matches, but she's never won anything of any note.
Yeah.
And that's not Braun Strowman. Braun Strowman has beaten in marquee matchups superstars. Yeah,
I think I was more thinking bringing in instead of keeping the monster going, bringing something else in.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just mentioning what the WWE is missing the boat on with Nia Jax right now. We did have a really nice video package for Asuka highlighting her undefeated streak from NXT to WWE. That was really well done. It was done differently than other packages. A lot of voiceover, and I'm glad they're doing that. When you have the story, push the story. It's already interesting. Undefeated streaks are wonderful when they go on long enough to mean something and to matter. And Asuka's does. Speaking of bad promos, Titus Worldwide. Apollo Crews looked like he was dead-eyedly reading his script off of cue cards. And this was not written well. It was not performed well. Sorry, guys. That just wasn't good.
I enjoyed it a little bit, because I thought that this was a moment for Apollo to show a little personality, and I think that he did.
Okay.
A lot more than he's been given the opportunity to, I feel like, because most of the time on microphone segments for Titus Worldwide, it's all Titus. And I thought that Apollo was given a little bit of time to show a little charisma. Yes, it seems scripted, but I think that he did a decent enough job with what he was given for that.
Well,
I don't think that it was groundbreaking by any means, but I thought that that was a step in the right direction for his character.
Okay. At least, once again, they're giving him some feature. They're putting him in this match. I don't think he belonged in the match. He hasn't done anything to earn that, but he was there. And especially in the match, I think he represented himself well.
Yes,
there
he, at the end he of the really night. Did.
And probably the best that we've seen him portrayed in the main roster. Paige, am I wrong, or has they never really address the fact that Paige is not an in-ring performer at this point? Or they've talked a little bit about an injury. I want to see Michael Cole mention something, but
prior to the Rumble, they brought up the injury super briefly. It sounded like they were speaking very quickly about it and were like, all right, let's move on, when they announced that she wasn't going to be in the Rumble because of an injury. And they have not, that I recall, brought it up since then.
So, Absolution, who is less relevant by the week as a faction, come out to Paige's music. Paige comes out in her wrestling gear. She hasn't cut a promo in weeks. They don't seem like a cohesive unit whatsoever. They don't win. They're not at all dominant in any way, shape, or form. If Paige is no longer an in-ring worker, and by the way, I really hope Paige is able to be cleared and continue her career. She's a wonderful wrestler with all the potential in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But if she's not going to be able to go, for at least for the time being, put her in street clothes and let her manage these two. Let her cut promos for these two.
Yeah.
Let her get them over in the best way that she can. have her work with Paul Heyman or something, you know, have her work with somebody and get these two over, help them, because both Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville do need help.
Yes.
But to have her continually come out there, but not interact, not wrestle, it seems like they have one foot in, one foot out. The people that aren't reading dirt sheets have to be confused by this. And Absolution was this like going to be this dominant female stable, and they have not. They just now go out there and wrestle random matches mm-hmm. that mean nothing. Am I wrong here? What do you think?
No, this group is a mess. You do have, like you said, people have to be curious as to what is going on with Paige for the ones who aren't internet savvy or whatnot. I think that Mandy Rose is still super, super, super green. And this match was more evidence of that. I love Sonya Deville.
So do I.
I think that she has shown great strides in the limited opportunity she's been given. Even little bits of time on the microphone, she seems confident in the stuff that she says. But yeah, there's nothing that they are giving her other than, hey, you're a tough girl with MMA background and you wear your hair up.
And
there's nothing that builds off of that.
And I also have a fear with Ronda Rousey being there. What does that do for Sonya Deville's character? Basically, she's playing Ronda Rousey before they had Ronda Rousey.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a shame for her. But no, I'm with you on Sonya Deville. I think she has a lot of upside. I just, these women factions that have come up have been so poorly mishandled that they're non-entities whatsoever. Neither one of the women, Sonya Deville nor Mandy Rose, belong in the Elimination Chamber. And they've done nothing to show that they belong there. And they haven't had any mic time or anything to get them over and to show what kind of character they are. I guess Mandy Rose now says, you can't take your eyes off of me or something. That's the most character development one-line catchphrase that I've ever heard from her. So I think they're very, very misplaced right now. The heels did go over in this match versus Alexa Bliss and Mickie James. I do like the storyline with Mickie and Alexa, because this is treading on some long history between them two, those two, at least over the last year or so. So I do like that. And I like Alexa as a manipulative heel trying to keep her championship. That side of it was very good. The Absolution side, not so much.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
But they did give them a win. So let's give them that. Braun Strowman sings. Now, I have strong feelings on this. Mm-hmm. I found it extremely charming that Braun Strowman came out with a stand-up bass and played it like a guitar. I find it extremely charming that he broke the strings with one strum of his hand. I find it charming that he took a bass guitar, or stand-up bass, I should say, and walked down to the ring just like Elias does with his acoustic. All those visuals were wonderful. What I don't care for is Braun Strowman is a monster. There's still legs with that. Him being this dominant, unrelenting force of nature has a lot of stories with a lot of different people that can play out. Him going comedy, and the guy obviously has good comedy timing. I guess Facebook, social media, he's very funny.
Mm-hmm.
I love all that. I just think you've got months and months, if not a year or more, of storylines as this brutish force. Going comedy at this point always scares me. Because unlike Rusev, who's going more in a comedy route with some of his stuff because he has a charm, because his seriousness of his character is dead in the water. People stopped believing he was a dominant force or could beat anybody. So he had to change it up. Not everyone needs to be The Rock. Not everyone needs to be able to entertain like The New Day. That's my only issue with this.
I get what you're saying, but Braun is already over. And I think that him doing this, and just based off of what I've seen on the internet, like the internet was eating it up, and they still were this morning. I don't think that this had a negative impact on his character, his overness.
No, not right now. Not right now at all.
I think if they can keep it to limited engagements of the Braun Strowman sitcom hour, then I think that it can work. kind of like what they did with Kurt. Like, let him be funny every once in a while, but then maintain his seriousness and his wrestling machine persona. But I was not that turned off by this. It was a, when I first saw him sit down with a spotlight on him, I was like, oh shit, he's gonna sing a song. And then when he pulled out the bass guitar, I was like, okay, this is funny. But
the physical parts of this were good. The actual scripted parts I thought were god awful, and I didn't care for that, to the actual song and all that kind of stuff. This is one time. It doesn't make anything. It doesn't mean anything at one time. He's feuding with Elias. That's what he does. I get all that. But the WWE has a history of killing great characters and great angles, yes, and momentum with doing garbage booking, that this wishful thinking that they can make everybody everything for
and
everybody.
And I can see where you can be afraid that, okay, this one time, the fans enjoyed that. Now they're going to just run it into the ground like they do with everything.
Fashion files. Yeah. It's just kind of the same thing. So listen, this is just, stick a pin in this. I'm just saying that this was not my favorite thing in the world, even though there was some charming aspects to it. The match with Roman Reigns and Sheamus, we have seen this a million times. This match meant nothing. It was a match.
It was a good match.
It was a good match.
But
without a doubt.
Yeah, it had no consequences to it.
No stakes. When we have other matches about who will enter the chamber first, who will get into the chamber, matches like this stick out like a sore thumb when other matches on the card matter and mean something, and this just did not. Ivory is announced as being the female entrant. They almost always have one female entrant in the Hall of Fame, so we're guessing it's only going to be Ivory this year. Good for her.
Yeah.
They did mention her history with GLOW.
They also mentioned her history with China.
Yes.
Who is still not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's true. I did like the fact that she basically got squashed by China after the whole neck thing happened in that match. It wasn't like she had a five-star classic with China at WrestleMania. Her crowning achievement was getting beaten pretty handily by China. I mean, the footage they showed before that was all leading up to the match where she tried to injure her neck. They downplayed a little bit of her history before coming to WWE, like they always do, but that's really why she deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Her WWE career was good. It was not the level of Trish Stratus or Lita or some of the other people, because she just wasn't that relevant for that long and wasn't featured in the show, blah, blah, blah. But no, Ivory, great women's wrestler, did amazing stuff, wrestled in a time where women were there to be eye candy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Love Ivory. Love the fact that she's going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And hopefully China gets some recognition at some point. And if we want to talk about it, there's a few other women from that time period, I think, that also should be in there, such as Victoria, maybe even Molly Holly.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
Who were wrestlers during the eye candy stage.
Yeah, for sure. And the main event of the evening, which was supposed to be a fatal four-way, turns into a fatal five-way. Bop, 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 bop. Fine match. Good spots for pretty much everyone throughout. We have Bray eating a pin from two guys. The only two guys that could have won this match. Finn Balor, Seth Rollins. The only two guys over enough, relevant enough to go into this chamber match.
And of course, Bray is the one to take the pin.
Bray takes the pin there. But, you know, I would have said that Apollo Crews was there to take the pin. So
I think that this was a positive night for Apollo. They made him look very good at points during this match, and they did protect him from taking the fall.
And he was featured late in the match, which is always a big thing there, because as that kind of, we're building to that crescendo, Apollo Crews is doing standing shooting star presses, which was good.
And I think that the crowd even got behind him for a little while, too.
Absolutely, and that was a good sign. But we do get the simultaneous pin with Finn and Seth. And we didn't know if they were then going to have a match the following week. Nope, they're both added to the chamber. So now we have a 7-person elimination chamber match. Sure, elimination chamber, fun concept. Interested to see it. Excited that we're having it. But there's only one guy that's going to win this match, and that's Roman Reigns. Mm-hmm. If Roman's not involved in this, if this was not a WrestleMania main event on the line, that's one of the biggest problems with the idea that you're going to main event WrestleMania or you're going to go to fight the champ at WrestleMania. It's so predictable who's going to be that person almost every time. if this was just for a title match down the road and it didn't have to be at Mania, well, then a lot of different guys can have this happen. But all this drama, is Seth going to be in there? Is Finn going to be in there? Well, neither going to win at all. Why do we really need that? Why do we need a seventh person entering a match that everybody knows the outcome of already?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good for both of them, by the way. They're both great stars and really deserve a match there, but...
And going back to something we kind of touched on but didn't go too deep into, how do they make this happen? Are they adding another pod, or are they going to start with three people in the ring instead of two?
A plastic Lexan container, like I said, Mike.
Or they make Seth and Finn share a pod because they won at the same time. So, like, all right, you guys got to go in that pod together, and when it opens, then you both can come out.
Well, they can put Seth and Roman in the same pod. They're teammates in the Shield.
Yeah. I think it would just... It'd be funny regardless if they put two people into a pod.
They'll probably have a third person start, or they'll have another makeshift pod in the middle somewhere. Who knows? I'm not really that all that interested in, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. But good for both of them being featured. Good that Finn got involved in this match because he's doing nothing. And Seth is doing nothing. So that's at least a good thing.
Yeah. So that does it for Raw. Let's go into SmackDown Live, where we started things off with Dolph Ziggler coming out with his... okay, WWE. Dolph has been off TV for 7 weeks. You made that a point to let us know that multiple times throughout the show. Can you figure out whether he has music or not? Because you did the scratch. He came out to the darkness and no music and then cut right into his music and his Tron. Okay, pick one and stick with it. So this was supposed to be Dolph's first match back since relinquishing the U.S. title and just quitting against Baron Corbin, where the winner of the match would be added into the WWE Championship match at Fastlane. Well, before Baron Corbin can even make it to the ring, he is attacked in the backstage area by Kevin and Sammy to try to take him out of this whole equation. Then they turn their attention to the ringside and go after Dolph, beat him up for a good bit. Baron comes out and tries to get back at them, but no, the two guys beat him up again. Then finally, at that point, people come out to put an end to this, even though they just beat up two guys practically for 10 minutes without any intervention.
I am going to get all this out right now, and I'm not going to talk about this for the rest of the show. I could probably talk about Dolph Ziggler's booking for an hour. I could take a whole episode of the Missed Spots podcast about this.
The curious case of Dolph Ziggler.
What the fuck are they thinking? They take a guy who's been spurned by the audience, who doesn't like entrances and flash and showmanship, that just is a great technical wrestler and is going to prove it in the ring. They have him win a title after horrible booking and ridiculous entrances and all this other garbage for weeks. They have him then win a title out of nowhere, being added to a match that he wasn't a part of originally, then have him abdicate that title the next night and disappear for 7 weeks, basically saying, you people don't deserve me anymore. So there's an angle coming, right? Something's going to happen with Dolph. Something's going to lead him back. Nope, shows up randomly at Royal Rumble. Then we don't see him for a couple weeks, shows up randomly, and gets a shot at the world title after walking out of the company and telling all the fans basically to go fuck themselves. Then he gets a shot to enter a championship match, to win a match, to enter a championship match, comes out to no music, no fanfare. Oh, wait a minute, now his music plays. Later on in the night, cuts babyface Dolph promo number 43 about being the best at what he does and how he loves this and he's here to rate main event WrestleMania. So now Dolph is acting like babyface Dolph again with no provocation whatsoever. Why'd you leave? Why'd you abdicate your title? What is going on? None of this is answered. They just pretend that doesn't happen after mentioning that he'd been gone. And he's back to being this character that was bland to begin with while you even went down this road. Fucking bananas. It makes no sense whatsoever. It's super annoying. Dolph is vanilla and boring in this role that we've had him for so long. There was so much potential in this. I don't have music. I don't go out there with flash. I go out there to win matches. There was a lot of promise there. They mined that for nothing. They did nothing with that. Now they're back to the same thing, the same status quo, without mentioning anything. Zero planning, zero foresight, poor booking at its finest. Thank you, and now I will not talk about Dolph Ziggler for the rest of this podcast.
Nail, may your head meet hammer. I can't really add anything to that, but you can speak for me in that case. The first actual match that we got of the night was Sarah Logan taking on Charlotte. And in our opinion, this was an awful match. I saw so many people on Twitter saying, what a great match. Sarah Logan really showing that she has what it takes in this industry. Did we watch a different match? Because I saw at least three or four different times that Sarah Logan almost dumped Charlotte on her head.
I saw Sarah Logan I saw the two of them. We are not professional wrestlers, you and I, Mike. There are a lot of times where we'll blame one person when it might have been the other person that made the mistake. Together, Charlotte and Sarah Logan had a dreadful match there. There was so many awkward moments where it looked like someone was supposed to do something and didn't do it. There were awkward spots. There were dangerous looking spots. There was timing issues. This one did not look good. There was points where it looked kind of brutal because it looked like they were legitimately in danger of hurting one another. This was not good. Sarah Logan is, other than being Southern, she has no defining characteristic whatsoever, and she's not very good in the ring. What is she doing on NXT? This is where Sarah Logan, this is what NXT is there for, right?
Yeah.
To let her flesh out a character, get good in the ring, and become a star. She could have followed that path. She does not belong up there on the main roster. There is nothing about her performance, her character, that makes me want to have her on my television screen. And she has potential, and she could be great. She could be the next great women's champion. 100% I believe that. Right now, she is a non-entity and dreadful and worrisome to watch.
Yeah. It's cringeworthy at best. She seems to be working in slow motion out there. And yeah, her and Mandy Rose seem to just have a lot of the same problems. They need to go to NXT. They need to work on their styles, work on their whole everything. That was a bad, bad match. And I'd like to say it's at no fault of Charlotte but you're right. What you said before, we don't know. There could have been just really bad timing from both parties involved. After this, Shane...
Can I also just mention that this match had no bearing on anything whatsoever and was pointless. And this is the 4,000th pairing of the Riot Squad fighting this menage of women for the end of time for no reason.
It led to them announcing a 6-woman tag match for next weekend or next week that I'm fairly certain we've seen at least 5 times already.
Sure, of course we have.
And you know what? Even if we haven't seen it 5 times before, it feels like it.
Perfect.
Because nothing has changed. Shane announces to Daniel Bryan that Kevin Owens is going to take on Baron Corbin in a singles match, and Sammy is going to take on Dolph in a singles match, where if Baron and Dolph win their individual matches, they will be added to the title match, potentially making a fatal 5-way. But if Kevin or Sammy try to interfere on the other's behalf in their matches, they will be removed from said match. And we went right into Kevin Owens and Baron Corbin in their match. I thought it was a pretty good match.
It was.
And Baron ends up winning with an end of days with a nice little counter to the pop-up power bomb. And he gets added into the Fastlane title match.
What has Baron Corbin done in the last several months to earn a shot at going into a title match? Is it losing pretty much every match he has? Is it losing his Money in the Bank briefcase and not winning the United States Championship and overall being a bland and boring character?
Then winning the U.S. Championship and then losing it pretty quickly.
Yeah. But all that being said, this was heel versus heel all night with this whole trifecta, these four people that were going at it until we found out about the other guy that I'm not going to mention again being a babyface again. But Corbin was over in this match. They were cheering for Corbin. They popped when he won.
Mm-hmm.
Baron Corbin is just looking at him the most unlikable person. I think if you were designing an unlikable person, all you'd have to do is have him smirk like Roman Reigns and say tater tots, and then you'd have the most unlikable person in the world. But apparently the crowd was that much for him because they hate Kevin Owens. I believe that's great for Kevin Owens and what he has done.
That's what he's trying to do with his character.
I have liked Baron Corbin since the Apollo Crews feud when he was down in NXT. All the jokes we make about Baron, I still think this guy has world champion on him. I think he can do it. I think he has one of the most believable punches in the business. I think that he has good body language, posture. I think he carries himself like a superstar. Do I think he needs to expand his game as a worker? Sure. But first and foremost, just book him like he matters.
Mm-hmm.
This is a step towards that direction.
A lot of this is not his own fault.
No, it's a good step in the right direction, but it still comes out of nowhere. It makes no sense why he would get that position to do this, but he's there, and now he's in the title match.
Yeah. And we got then a U.S. Open challenge with Bobby Roode coming out. He gets on the mic, and he pretty much says, yes, this is an open challenge, but there's only one person who I really hope that comes out and accepts it, and that's Randy Orton. Randy Orton comes out, and they talk a little bit, and then Jinder comes out. All right, and some talking about stuff and respect and things. And then Randy pretty much RKOs the Singh brother, don't know which one, and then Colossus to both of them, and Jinder stands tall over Randy and Bobby Roode. We thought after last week that there might be going towards a three-way feud for the U.S. title, but we weren't expecting Jinder. We were expecting Rusev.
We were hoping, and Rusev was nowhere to be seen, by the way.
Yeah.
But we did get a chant of Rusev Day.
Yes, we did.
At least once during the night, which, you know, Shane McMahon the week before said noted when they were chanting Rusev Day.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not so much. I want to thank the WWE because they obviously got my fan letters. At the end of the Jinder Mahal Randy Orton feud, I wrote countless letters to them, and they said, "Dear Mr. McMahon, I want nothing more than to see Randy Orton and Jinder Mahal fight more. It in no way was boring or tedious. They were not the worst pay-per-view main events that I've seen in a long time. They are both interesting individuals that need much more screen time together." I wrote five of those a day under different names and sent them to Vince McMahon. I'm glad he got my letters because they're now, my dream has come true. They've put Blandy Orton, you see what I did there? And Jinder Mahal together again. And this time they've added one of the most one-note, boring and miscast champions that you can possibly imagine. Bobby Roode. Great heel. Great gimmick. Great everything, right? Solid in-ring worker. Works a solid style, not spectacular, but can definitely have matches with high caliber talent. Miscast as a babyface and a bland U.S. champion.
One-trick pony babyface.
Three of the most boring people right now on the main roster, now in a feud for the U.S. championship. Oh, am I not looking forward to this.
They are going to try to make us not fall asleep.
At least Bobby Roode called Randy Orton for coming out and RKOing him out of nowhere. And then Jinder Mahal, or I think it was Bobby that said, the reason why you're not number one or whatever is because you keep beating up people for no reason. True. Okay. Point proven. Randy Orton is a heel. He's a terrible person. Let's just go with that. And they're also fighting, by the way. By the way, the impetus of this appears to be the SmackDown top 10 rankings. Which mean nothing to no one at all.
And guess what? We didn't get a new ranking this week.
No.
They just recapped last week's. I thought this was supposed to be a weekly thing.
They have no idea what this is supposed to be. This
will be gone in 3 weeks.
This means nothing. They didn't use any of this information for anything, and they never will. They'll use it in 3 weeks to justify one match, and then they'll forget about it again. Absolutely bonkers.
Then we got the New Day, and they came out for a Big E pancake eating contest against himself. he was the only contestant.
Yes.
Gable and Benjamin come out right as this begins to talk some trash and throw pancakes on the ground, which infuriates the New Day to no extent. This led into a tag team match with Big E and Kofi, taking on Gable and Benjamin, and the New Day wins with shenanigans. Xavier Woods gets up onto the apron to distract the referee so he doesn't end up seeing Gable tagging in Benjamin. So they have an argument with the ref, and then Gable ends up eating the Midnight Hour for the win for the New Day. It's been a little while since we have seen the New Day kind of cheat or bend the rules a bit in order to win.
Yeah, I did notice that, and we haven't seen this since the early parts of their babyface run, when they were still playing heels in a lot of ways, at least with their antics on the outside. Perfectly fine with this pairing of guys. Fighting over pancakes, okay. Ice cream, pancakes. I mean, is it going to be crepes next? Waffles? Are we going to get Eggs Benedict? Are they going to get into... What other breakfast foods can we get into after cereal and pancakes? Ice cream cake. I don't know where I don't get it. I'm sorry. I don't understand. The New Day are so entertaining and charismatic that I forget while I'm watching how uninteresting anything they're saying is, because they're just so good at what they do. But I don't understand pancakes.
You were saying as we were watching the show that you think that the New Day just come up with the most bizarre things possible, pitch them to WWE, and they just say, go with it. So they're just entertaining themselves by trying to see what it will take for them to have something denied about going on TV.
I believe that in 3 months, they will get Lunchables over. It'll be all about Lunchables, baby. And they'll be throwing Lunchables into the crowd. I have no idea where any of this is going, but I like the pairing. I think good matches can come out of this. So hopefully we'll see that.
Yeah. We got an Usos pre-taped segment with words flashing on the screen. And this led to the Bludgeon Brothers smashing a television that had the promo playing on it. And that was it.
Perfectly good way to continue to put this feud in the spotlight without having them interact. I am a big fan of holding off on physicality between teams. I think it's great.
This is 3 weeks in a row that they have not physically interacted.
Love this. I like the setup for this. I don't like words on the screen, but I'll take the rest of all this. What everything else is going on.
Yeah. And then we get the main event is Sammy versus Dolph, for Dolph getting a chance to get into the title match at Fastlane. No AJ Styles on this episode. No Nakamura on the episode as well. Interesting, but we've been about this plenty of times that you don't always have to have the people on the show.
If they don't have anything constructive to do, don't have them. Mm-hmm. Let them come out for the dark match for the crowd and send them home happy. We don't need to see them every week unless they have a damn good reason to be out there.
Yeah. So we had a nice fine match between Sammy and Dolph. And when Baron won his match, you knew that Dolph was going to win his. And that is what we got. Although we did have a couple nice false finishes at one point during there, especially late in the match. But Dolph wins and sets up the Fatal 5-Way at Fastlane for the WWE title. I know that he is the person who you don't want to talk about for the rest of the show. So I guess we can just end it there for SmackDown. You're looking so angry, your arms crossed, shaking your head at me.
I don't want to continue to go on about this any longer than I have to. A Fatal 5-Way honestly is a more interesting match for the first time. First time ever, I'm ever going to say this, because I was so tired of Sammy and Kevin and AJ. Adding these two ancillary pieces, ancillary, you like that word? You're welcome. Yeah. Adding these two ancillary pieces to this match that don't really make sense there. It's out of left field, but at least it's something different from the repetition we have gotten for weeks and weeks and weeks. So there's that, I guess.
Yeah, and with that said, I guess we are done talking about television for this week. Is there anything else that's been going on in wrestling? I can't really think of.
I mean, several things.
We've talked about a lot of it as the shows are going on.
Well, I mean, rapid fire a few things. Apparently, Triple H is in charge 100% of 205 Live now.
I did not see that.
Apparently, Vince is completely hands off with that, or at least the rumors are that, and he's focusing on obviously the XFL relaunch. But this, all the things going forward with the former rock star Spud, which has like Sexton Hardcastle or whatever his name is now,
Drake Maverick.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Sexton Hardcastle. It's basically the same name. That was actually Edge's
yeah.
name. Yeah, I still think it's wonderful. If I was a porn star, Sexton Hardcastle. Apparently, going for more of this kind of straight laced authority figure tournaments, things like that. That's apparently Triple H's vision of that. I hope it works for them. And I hope eventually he gets a chance to do that with SmackDown. That would be wonderful. Because I do think, as much as everyone maligns Triple H for just putting himself over and you know, all this other stuff, he's got a great wrestling mind. And he loves the business of professional wrestling. And it's evident in the way that NXT has been aligned over the years and kind of in interviews and how he talks about the business. So I'm excited about that. The other thing was that we have now heard that we are possibly going to get all pay-per-views being co-branded pay-per-views.
Yeah, you were mentioning that. I had not seen that as well. It's really interesting that they would want to go in that direction. It almost seems like they would be giving up on the brand split to a certain extent, because this is going to mean less people get a chance to be on pay-per-views.
There's that, but then there's also the rumor that they're going to add an hour to every pay-per-view. I don't know how I feel about this. I'm not a big fan of adding an hour to the pay-per-views because they can become very, very tedious. I am upset that you would not get a chance to see. This means that Rusev is never getting a pay-per-view match, right? I mean, if you only got three or four matches on your side of the card, it's going to involve six guys, eight guys. And there's a lot of people on the outside looking in when it comes to that. Would that mean that there's more storylines playing out on free TV? Great if they do that, but they've never shown the ability or the desire to do that consistently in the past. So I'm not sure how I feel about this. And we don't even know if it's true, but apparently there was like some words on the WWE comment saying a announcement is coming soon or something of that nature. And we know what that means, that we're going to also probably have crossover, I would say more crossover feuds as well. Mm-hmm. I would not be surprised to see that if they're going to have more interaction between the rosters.
Interesting. So we'll keep up with that as any news on that comes along. But I think that is probably it for the rest of the show. Thank you, everyone, for joining us once again. Make sure that you follow us on our social media outlets, such as Twitter and Instagram. You can follow us at Miss Spots there. We're always live tweeting along to Monday Night Raw, SmackDown, and to the pay-per-views. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/MissSpots. You can listen to this podcast in one of many different fashions, whichever makes it easiest for you. You can get it on our website at MissSpotsPodcast.com or simply MissSpots.com. You can get it on any of the major podcast streaming outlets such as iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, Podcast Addict, TuneIn, anywhere. Subscribe and get it to the device of your choice, free of charge, every Thursday. You can also listen to us on Geek Life Radio every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central at geeklifradio.com. For Kevin, my name's Mike. We'll catch you next week. Good night and good wrestling.